And we're holding on Nunvav Ahmed Bey's, the third to last line of the narrow lines. That line begins also. We're in the middle of discussing the six things that the Anshe Yerichai did, where we said, we had Reb Meir had said that three of them the Chacham approved of, and three of them they didn't, and Rabbi Huda said, no, it can't be the Chacham approved of anything, because the fact is, the Halacha is, you're not allowed to do any of these six things, it's just rather three of them the Chachamim found it necessary to protest, and three of them they didn't because there's some kind of heter for it, or because b'dievet it's okay, or whatever. So the last one we have, the last one we said, that according to the mayor was Shaloi Birtsan Chachamim, the Chacham disapproved of it, and according to the Yehuda, in fact, Michu B'yadim Chachamim, that the Chacham protested, was, we said, V'nosnin Peya L'yerek, that they would give Peya from vegetables. Which we said, the problem is, therefore, that the Aniyim, who get this Peya, think that it's Potter from Meiser, when in fact it's not, because it's not valid Peya. Because you don't give peya from vegetables. So the question is, Leslahu Anshe Yerichai Hadetnan, don't the people of Yerichai agree with what it says in a Mishnah? It's a Stam Mishnah, nobody disagrees with it. Klal Omer V'peya, the Chachamim set a general rule as far as peya. How do we know what produce, what types of produce are chayev in peya or not? So it has to meet the following criteria. Kol Shehu Oichel. And we're going to go through, after we go through these criteria, then we're going to explain what each one of them comes to exclude. Kol Shehu Oichel, it has to be food. The Nishmar, and something that's guarded, meaning not Hefker. The Gedulei Min Ha'aretz, it grows from the ground. Or the Kitosei Kachas, it's all harvested, the whole crop of it is harvested at one time. Or Machnis Tilekiyum, and you put it away for long-term storage. So those kinds of things, chayev v'peya, those are the things that are chayev in peya. If it's missing one or another of those criteria, then it's potter. So let's go through. Kol Shehu Oichel, when we're saying anything that's food, means prat l'sviche stis v'koitza, as opposed to aftergrowths of stis and koitza. So stis and koitza are different kinds of plants. Rashi translates stis as saffron, and koitza as a plant that they get from it a blue dye. In English, it's called woad. Whatever it is, the actual stis and koitza themselves, Rashi says, are edible, but the svichim of them, when you have that seeds of them fall on the ground and then grow on their own, those are hard and those are not roy to eat. So those, a person is potter from peya for those. The nishma prat lehefker, when we say that it's guarded, means as opposed to if it's hefker, then hefker is potter from peya. The gedulei min ha'aretz, when we say that it grows from the ground, prat l'kmein or pitrius, as opposed to mushrooms and truffles, which, as we learned back in Masechta Eruvin in connection with the dinim of Eruvei Tchumen and Shetufei Mevayis and whatever, those don't actually, those are attached to the ground, but they don't get their nutrition from the ground, they get their nutrition from the air. So therefore, they're not going to say they don't grow from the ground, and therefore, they're not chayev in peya. When we say they're all harvested, a whole crop is harvested at once, means as opposed to figs, because figs don't, the figs on a tree don't ripen all at once. Different ones ripen at different times, sometimes even different times of the day. You may come back and find that one is ripened where earlier in the day it wasn't. In fact, there's places in the Medrash, I think we've talked about this before, there's places in the Medrash where therefore one of the comparisons, one of the things that we compare learning Torah to is like a fig tree. Every time you come to a fig tree, you'll find a newly ripened fig, and the same way every time you learn Torah, you discover something new in it. So as opposed to figs, or machnisi l'kiyum prat l'yerek, and when we say that you store it away long term, means as opposed to vegetables, because vegetables can't be stored away long term, they're going to spoil. So we know from that Mishnah, therefore, that vegetables are potter from peya. So what were the Anshe Yerichai thinking? Again, we said yesterday they were Bnei Torah. They did know their stuff. We're just, you know, in certain details of Halacha, the Chachamim disagreed with them. But they know their stuff. They should know peya is potter. So what are they thinking? By the way, Tosfos over here holds, Rabbi Natam, and Tosfos holds that actually when we say these five criteria, really all of that is only Midrabbanan anyway. Midaraisa, he says, only grain, grapes, and olives would be chayev and peya. On the other hand, many other Rishonim disagree with that and say that that may be true as far as Truma and Meiser. Even that, you have a Machlokas, whether other kinds of fruits are chayav in it. But many other Rishonim say that, no, when it comes, including, I think, the Rambam, say that, no, when it comes to Peah, then these five criteria are Daraisa, and therefore anything that meets these five is chayav in Peah Daraisa. So, for example, most kinds of tree fruits, except for figs, they're saying. But again, the point would be that vegetables definitely not, because they don't meet the fifth criteria. They're not machnis elikiyum. You don't keep them long term. So the answer is Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Hocha b'roshe lefoses eskinen. We're talking over here specifically about turnip bulbs. Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains, you have the actual turnips themselves, the actual roots, like the kind you buy in the store. They often have leaves attached to them. So now what it is you're storing away the roots and the leaves go together with them. So So the argument is, when you have something which in and of itself you wouldn't keep it, you wouldn't keep the turnip leaves by themselves because they're not going to last for very long. But once you're storing away the turnips, then you store away the leaves with them also. So now the question is, do you have to take pay from those leaves? The Anshe Yerichai held that since you are storing away those leaves, even though it's not by themselves, only together with the turnip roots, then therefore they are chayav and peah, so therefore they took peah from them. Where's the chum hold that it's not, and therefore they protested and told them that no, you take the problem is, it's not, we if it weren't for the problem of meiser on them, we could have said, very nice, you want to give peah from them, you want to give extra tzedakah, because under hate, but it creates this problem that now you're giving them something which they think is potter from meiser, and they're eating it, and meanwhile it's chayav and meiser. So Meiser Chayiv, even so, again, you have a machlokas Rishonim whether Meiser applies to other kinds of things other than grain, grapes, and olives. Everybody does agree that Meiser are vegetables and only Dirabanan, but still, it's Dirabanan. You still have to take Meiser from them, otherwise it's Tevel and Dirabanan. And again, the problem is over here that according to the Chachamim, since these leaves are not chayev and peah, then the peah that you're giving the poor people is, they think it's potter from Meiser Drabanan, and really it's chayev and Meiser Drabanan. Well, everything over here we're talking is Drabanan, but still you have to respect Drabanans as well. You can't be machshel the poor people in things Drabanan either. So these are the ones that the Chachamim made a macha, yeah. Rabbeinu Hanano, by the way, has a different explanation of it. He says that even the turnips themselves, you can't really keep, there's a limit how long term you can keep them. Eventually they're going to spoil. What it is that they preserve them. They put them in vinegar or whatever in order to preserve them long term. So in other words, Rabbeinu Hananel is learning, it's not so much about the leaves, it's about the turnips themselves. The turnips themselves, there's a limit how long they're going to stay, so they're not machnis lekiyum, you don't leave them for such long-term storage. But if you preserve them, if you pickle them, then you can. So the Anshe Yerichai held, since you can pickle them and store them long-term, then they're chayav and peah, and the Chachamim disagreed. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about that, about what's chayav and potter in peah. So by the way, Tosfos points out an interesting point over here. In we said that among the five criteria, we said if it's hefker, then it's not chayav and peah. Well, if they're giving these vegetables to the poor people, doesn't that amount to they're making them hefker? So in that case, then what's the problem anyway? And the answer is Tosfos says, because we have actually a machlokas b'shamay and b'shillel about if you make something hefker only for poor people. B'shamay holds that works, b'shillel holds that doesn't work. So b'shillel holds that doesn't work. It only works if you make it hefker for everybody, for aniyim and ashirim, just like shmita. So therefore, over here, they're only making it hefker for the poor people. So therefore, according to b'shillel, which the halacha is like b'shillel, then it's not hefker, so therefore it's not potter. So Maaser Ani, the Torah tells us, has to be given to the Aniyim. So that's a special case. That's only for Aniyim. But ordinarily, if you want to make something hefker, it has to be that you're making it hefker for everybody, says Beis Hillel. Also, Tosfos points out, even Beis Shammai, who holds hefker, Aniyim would be valid hefker, but in this case, because they don't have to be taking peah from these things, and they think they have to, it's called hefker betos. And Vishamai agrees that so Vishamai agrees that Hefker Batos is not a valid Hefker. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tananabanan, but is Shona how you noised in pale or lefis or lakruv. Originally, they, I guess the pashtos, it means these Anshe Yerichai before the Ham protested, used to give payah from turnips and from cabbages. Rabbi Yossi Omer Afla Kathlet. Rabbi Yossi says also from leeks. So that's one braisa. The Tanya Edoch, then another braisa says, how you noised in payah lelefis or lakathlet. They used to give payah from turnips and from leeks. Rabbi Shimon Omer Afla Kruv, and Rabbi Shimon says also from cabbages. So the Gemara says, name a plus a tanoi habu. Do we have to say that there were three different tanoim arguing about what the Anshe Yerichai did? And we would rather not do that. The most we would rather have is a machlokes between two sides. So the answer is loy tre tanoi habu. No, the answer is there's really only two tanoim. The Tanakama did of Shimon Heiner of Yosi. What happens is, in the second Braisa, when we say that they used to give from turnips and from leeks, and Rav Shimon adds cabbages, who is the Tanakama who says there, who's saying over there that they used to give from turnips and from leeks? That is Rav Yosi. The Tanakama did Rav Yosi, Hayne Rav Shimon. Conversely, in the first Braisa, when we said turnips and cabbages, and Rav Yosi says also leeks, the Tanakama there is Rav Shimon. Umay af akamaisa. So when each one of them is saying af, each one is saying, I'm adding something to the first thing that you said. So in the first braisa, it says turnips and also cabbages. Rabbi Yossi says, no, it wasn't turnips and cabbages. It was turnips and then leeks. Yeah. And then the second braisa, the same thing. They would give from turnips and from leeks. Rabbi Shimon says, no, it was turnips and cabbages, not leeks. So in other words, we have only two opinions over here. Okay. So the Gemara gives another case about this. Tan Rabbanan, Ben Buhyan, Nosin Peyel Yerek, Ben Buhyan, that was either that his father's name was Buhyan, so his son, Nosin Peyel Yerek, he gave payah from vegetables, Uva Oviv, so his father came back home, or came out of the house, whatever, Umotsan La Aniyim, show you to Unin Yerek, he found that the Aniyim were holding a lot of vegetables, Vo'imdin Pesach Hagina, and standing by the entrance of the garden, ready to go. Omalahem, so he says to the Aniyim, Bonai, my sons, Hashlichu Me'alechem, throw those vegetables down, don't take them, Va'ani Noisim Lachem Kiflayim B'mu'usr, I will give you twice as much of vegetables that have already been meistered. Loi mipnei she'eni tzora, and you should know it's not because I'm cheap and I don't want you to have these vegetables. Ela mipnei she'omer chachamim ein nosin peya liyarek, because the chachamim say you don't give peya from vegetables, and if you guys take these vegetables, then you're going to be over on eating tevel midrabanan. So the Gemara says why does he have to add that detail that it's not because I'm cheap? Let him just say, once he said already, I'm giving you twice as much of my sir, then well, of course he's not cheap. Of course he's not cheap. The answer is, because he doesn't want them to suspect. There's a concept in halacha of the yisim nikim, the Hashem of Israel. You have to act in a way that not only Hashem knows you're doing the right thing, but also the Jewish people do. You don't want them to think that. You don't want to think, he's saying he's going to give us twice as much. Sure, talk is cheap. He just wants us to drop these because he doesn't want to give it to us. So instead, after all, what's the point? They're not going to understand. Why do we have to leave these alone and he's going to give us twice as much? So therefore, he has to explain to them the reason is because this was given to you as payah and it doesn't work because payah is not given from vegetables and therefore you should know. So therefore, he had to explain to them it's not because I'm cheap. Don't think that I'm telling you to drop these and you're thinking, yeah, he's saying he's going to give us twice as much, but he's not going to. No, I have a reason, al pi halacha, for what I'm doing. Well, it's a way of explaining it. In other words, that once he's saying I'm not being cheap means, in other words, that he finishes off. Elam finishes omer chachamim ein noisin peyah liyarek, because the chachamim said you don't give peyah from vegetables. So that's it. So these aniyim may not have realized the difference, right? Okay, so now getting back to the Anshe Yerichai. So now what we're going to do is actually we're going to digress to something else first. You have the Intersefta on Ormasechta. Back to back, there are two braises, two paragraphs. We're going to quote the first one, and then we're going to quote the second one. The second one relates directly to our Mishnah because it goes back to, we said, one of the things that the Anshe Yerichai did which we said the Chachamim disapproved of and criticized them for, is Matirin Gamzias Shel Hekdesh, the matir, the branches that grew from trees of Hekdesh. So first the Gemara is going to bring a different, so we're going to explain why would they matish these trees in the first place. And then from that, first we're going to mention another Braisa that relates to that, and then we're going to get back to that. So Tana Rabbanan, Barishona Hoyama, now we have like this, background to the first Braisa that we're going to talk about. The Torah tells us that when a korban oila is brought, the skin of the korban oila belongs to the kohenim of that day's base of. So if it's a korban shlomim or something, then the owner keeps the skin. But if it's a korban oila, then the kohenim get it. And that applies whether it's a private person's oila or whether it's a korban sibur. So the Braisa describes, Tana Rabbanan, Barishona Hoyam Anichan Oris Kodshim Velushka Space Aparva. Originally, they used to put the skins of the Kodshim, of the Oilos, also Rashi says, actually, it's also the Hatois and Ashamois. So they would put all those skins in the Lishka Space Aparva, in the chamber of the Bais Mikdash called Bais Aparva. A couple of explanations why it's called that. One of them, the Gemara mentions in Yuma, because there was a magician named Parva who either he gave the money towards building it, or I think Tosfos over there mentions an interesting idea from a Medrash that this Parva wanted to see what the Kohen Gadol was doing in the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. Maybe he figured he could use it to improve his magic or whatever. So he started digging a tunnel under the Harabayas, and then they caught him. They caught him and killed him. And the place where they caught him was underneath this chamber, so therefore they renamed it Beis HaParva after him. Anyway, so they used to store these skins in the Beis HaParva, La'erev Hoyim Chalkinos and La'anshe Beis Av, and then in the evening they would divide them up among all the Kohenim of that day's Beis Av. The problem was, the problem is that powerful Kohenim would grab by force more than their share. Now you have to think of it, skins are worth a lot of money. So the Chachamim, or the Kohenim, whoever, made a takana that instead of dividing them up every day, when you only have the base of over there, and the base of, relatively speaking, is not that many people. Each mishmo is divided into six or seven batei of. So relatively speaking, you don't have as many people over there, so the Baalei Zroya can easily push their way through and get what they want. So instead, they would divide them every Erev Shabbos. To also call them mishmores for Shaklan Bahadodi, that way the whole mishma will come and divide it together, and there's strength in numbers. So this way, if you have the whole mishma over there, then it's going to be easier to prevent the Baalei Zroya from grabbing what they shouldn't. Still, the problem was that it wasn't the physically powerful Kohenim anymore. Now it was the G'dole Kohenim, Rashi says, Sorim Shabahem, the princes, the noblemen among the Kohenim, the ones who are more politically powerful, they would grab them by force, and even the whole Mishmah being there was not enough to stop that. So the owners went and were makdish all the skins to Bedek Abayis. And now even the Sorim, even these tough Kohenim are not going to be over on that and commit Me'ilah. Who are the Bailim? Rashi says means the entire Mishmar. Marsha says actually the whole Mishmar are considered the Bailim. Marsha says that actually it means the owners of the original Korbanos. Whatever the case, now they're makdish them, so now the Baalei Zroya are not going to interfere with them anymore. Yep, politics are not a new thing, definitely not. Amru, so they said, the result of that, so much money was raised by selling those skins, because once those skins belong to Hekdesh, you can sell them to people who need them for leather and parchment or whatever, so Hekdesh was making a lot of money from it. Loi hoyu yomim mu'atim, not very many days passed, ad shechipu sahecho kuloi, before they were able to cover the entire Heichel, the Tavlois Shal Zahav Shein Amal Amma, Ka'ivi Dino Zahav, with golden plates that were in each an Amma by an Amma, and the thickness of a gold dinner. They were able to plate the entire Heichel with so much gold that they had earned from selling these skins. When it came, every one of the Shalosh Regalim, they would take off the gold plates from the walls, and they would put them on the steps of the Harabayis, so everybody could see them. This way, the Oile Regal could see that the workmanship of them was beautiful, the Einbad Delem, and there's no flaw in the workmanship of it. They're not fake. They're made very beautifully. It can also mean, by the way, it can also mean that this way that the people should see that the good Kohenim are acting L'Shem Shemayim. Don't think that we were makdish them just because, you know, we have it in for these Sarim and we want to be mean to them. No, we're actually doing it L'Shem Shemayim in order that it should be used for a good purpose rather than that these people should be taking it and using it for their own selfish purposes. I guess when they say put on the steps, we don't mean, in other words, on this actual, not necessarily do we mean the actual steps where people would walk. First of all, yeah, you could have parts of the steps could be reserved for those, and the rest would be for people to walk. But it could also mean, Mila could mean like a high spot in the Har HaBayis. In other words, it was a place where it wasn't the Hechel. Right, so usually during the year, usually the Israelim can't see it. So every one of the Shalosh Regalim, they would take them, and they would go and take these gold plates off the walls, and then put them on the Mila Har HaBayis in order that everybody can see them. Then comes the next braisa in Tosefta over there, which relates directly back to the Anshe Yerichai. Tana, we learn in another braisa, Abasholim, Kodesh Shol Shikma Hoya B'Yerichai, there were trunks of Shikma trees in Yerichai, which, as we said, as the trunk grows and you chop off the branches, then the trunk gets thicker and thicker, and therefore it's good for beams for building. So they had such trees in Yerichai. V'Hoya Bali Zroyas Noit B'Nois and B'Zroya. Again, the powerful people were grabbing them bizroya with force. Omdu bailam v'ikdishim l'shamayim. So the owners went and were makdish them to hektish. So that explains. So these trees that we talked about in our Mishnah, which now years later the descendants of the original Anshe Yerichai want to use the branches of those trees, and the Chachamim are protesting against it. That's why how do these trees come to be hektish in the first place? Is because they were makdish them in order to keep them away from the Baal Izraya. So as we said yesterday, the Anshe Yerichai took the view that lahalacha there's no meila in those branches since they grew only afterwards. Therefore, there should be mutter. And the Chacham said, nevertheless, there's still an issur, at least midrabanan involved, and therefore you can't do that. They grew after they were machdish. Then they were machdish the tree, and then new branches are growing from it. That's fine, but nevertheless, there's an opinion. There's two opinions about it in Masechta Me'ilah. One is that Me'ilah does apply to them, and the other one is that it doesn't. So the Anshe Yerichai held like the opinion that says it doesn't, and the Chacham say even that opinion would say that it's also Dirabana. Okay. It's about these and people like them, these kinds of tough people who would grab things that don't belong to them and then cause problems over there, about them. Abba Shol ben Botnis said in the name of Abba Yosef ben Chanin about certain families of these families and the trouble about certain families of Kohenim in particular, or powerful people, and the trouble that they caused during the years before the Churban. He says, Oili mi beis Baitus, woe to me from the house of Baitus, Oili me Olosan, woe to me because of Olosan, Rashi says, means there's sticks. The word Allah in Masechta Shabbos means like a stick or a club. So like they would beat people with clubs and sticks. Maushah says that actually Olosan means their curses. Meloshan Allah. Oili mi beis Chanin, then he continues, woe to me from the house of Chanin, Oili mi lechishosan, woe to me because of their whispering. Meaning, so Rashi says Rashi says they would give bad advice, which could mean to between each other. It could mean that they would maser on people to the government. On the side over here, it brings from the Oroch. It means that they were Baalei Lashon Hara. And he continues, early based. So many of these were families of Kohenim. I mean, I don't know if all four of them were. We're listing four families over here. I don't know if all of them were, but at least some of them were. Yeah. What the Oroch on the side of it here, Agoyes V'Tzionim. You don't have Agoyes V'Tzionim in your Gemara, but it may bring it. It may bring it on the side of it. Next, Oli mi beis Katros. He continues, woe to me from the house of Katros. Oli mi kol Musan, woe to me because of their pens. They used to write. Rashi says they would write letters with bad. Bad things in them. For example, also slandering to the Roman government or whatever of what Jews are doing. You had a big problem in those days where you had certain Jews who were over friendly with the Romans and would report back to them or to their henchmen or whatever anything that they think that the Jews are doing that they claim they shouldn't. Yeah. As far as this Catrus, by the way, anybody who's ever been to the old city and has visited, there's a museum there called the Burnt House. It's the remnants of a house that was destroyed at the time of the Churban, where the Romans set the city on fire and burnt many parts of it, and they found the remnants of this house. They found it was a house of Kohanim. They found over there all the kalim in it were things that are not Makabel Tuma. And they found an inscription in one place, Beis Catrus. So apparently it seems to be the same family Catrus as our Gemara over here. They have over there nowadays, they have a light and sound show dramatizing events before the Churban. It's very, very moving. But yeah, anyway. And the last one, Oli Mebeis Yishmol ben Piachi, Oli Me Grupan. Woe to me because of the family of Yishmol ben Piachi, and woe to me because of their fists, that they were supposed to beat people up. So he continues, with all of these families, I guess they were all Kohanim, Shehem Kohanim Gedolim, all of them were Kohanim Gedolim. Now we know, especially towards the end of the second Beis Hamikdash, we know there were many people who would buy the Kohanim Gedola, and they were replaced very often. But what happened was, even though these Kohanim Gedolim themselves may have died in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or they were replaced by the Roman governors or whatever, they still had a tremendous amount of political power. So yeah, just the fact that at one point you were Kohen Gadol gives you a lot of power. You know, Lahavdo, you have similarly nowadays. You know, you have somebody served in Congress, let's say, even if they were voted out, they still have a tremendous amount of power. So these people are Kohenim Gadolim. Some of them died, but they still had their families, are still very powerful. Uvnehen Gizborim, their children are treasurers of the Beis Hamikdash. V'chasneim Amalkalin, their sons-in-law are Amalkalin, which is people in charge in the Beis Hamikdash. Rashi says Amalkalin is short for the words Omar Kola. He says everything, meaning that everything that's done in the Beis Hamikdash is done according to their instructions. V'avdei and chovten, so on the makleis, and their servants beat the people with sticks. So therefore, so Abba Yosef ben Chanin is saying, woe to me from these families and from the hardships that they caused the Jewish people. Marsha, by the way, points out, he says that you have a Gemara that mentions that there's four types of people that are not makabel pnei shechina. You have leitzim, people who scoff at things that are holy. You have baalei lashon hara. You have chanefim, people who flatter other people to say you're doing right when really they're not. And one other one. So he says each of the four families over here and what they're doing represents one of these four things. The ones over here with the ones with lechishasan are the baalei lashon hara. The ones with the ones with the fists represents chanufa, because the Gemara uses elsewhere the word fist in connection with chanfening and so forth. So each one of them is one of these groups that are not makabel pnei shechina, and they cause tremendous hardship for the Jewish people. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Tonan Abbanon, Arba Tzvachas Tzavcha Azara. Four times the Azara cried out. One meaning of it is that, in other words, there was a baskal coming out in the Azara when four particular Kohanim Gedolim assumed office. Rishona, the first one, was back before there was even a Beis Hamikdash, in the times of Mishkan Shiloh. Su'umi kan bnei Eli shetimu heichal Hashem, sons of Eli, go out over here because you're matame the heichal of Hashem. This is the famous bnei Eli at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, where they were treating the korbanos very contemptuously. They were grabbing portions of the korbanos before the chaylev is brought on the mizbeach and demanding whatever portions they want. And the pasuk phrases it over there that they would lie together with the women who came to bring korbanos. And the Gemara says that maybe not literally they lay with them, but they would delay their korbanos, etc. And then the Gemara has different opinions about it. One opinion is that Chofni did that, but Pinchas did not. Whatever the case, the point is that they were treating the Beis Hamikdash with great disrespect, and therefore, like, the Azara itself cried out about them, get out of here. This is before the first Beis Hamikdash, even. This is Mishkan Shiloh. Number two, v'oid savcha. Then at a later time, the Azara cried out, say mikan yisachar ish kfar barkai, get out of here, yisachar, the man from kfar barkai, who was Kohen Gadol, shemachabedes atzmo mechalal kodshe shemayim. He's honoring himself, but he's being mechalal the kodshim of Hashem. He's desecrating the kodshim of Hashem. Yeah. Da'ava korich yodeh b'shiroi v'ovid avodah. He would wrap his hands in silk and do the avodah. So two problems with it, Rashi says. Number one, it's a chatzitza between his hand and the keli, so it passes the avodah. Number two, it's a bizayin for the kodshim, like he's too great to get his hands dirty with the kodshim. Tosfos actually discusses that a little bit, that maybe in fact, maybe is it in fact, Tosfos discusses actually not in this connection. Here it's clearly a chatzitza, because you have to have that the keli touches the actual hand of the kohen, but in other contexts in halacha, if you were to wear gloves for other mitzvahs, for example, let's say for taking lulav, would it in fact be an issue? Tosfos discusses back and forth over there. There is discussion among the achronim about similarly as far as other mitzvahs. Moshe has an interesting tshuva about the question, a shochet wanted to shecht using gloves so he doesn't get his hands dirty. And Rav Moshe says, you know, here we're talking about kodshim, it's different. You have to have, it's a bizoyan, the actual mitzvah of itself, it's to shecht the korban and skin it and so on and so forth, and therefore, yes, you should be willing to get his hands dirty. The mitzvah of shechita doesn't necessarily involve getting your hands dirty. Conceivably, after all, you can even shecht an animal and no blood comes out. So therefore he says, okay, you know, the guy wants to wear gloves, then maybe it's not so bad. Maybe it's not a bazillion of the mitzvah. However, then on the other hand, it should be very thin gloves, because thicker gloves, then he's not going to be able to feel. He's not going to be able to feel the knife and whatever properly. So that was the second time when the Azara cried out to say, get out of here, to this Yisachar Ish Kfar Barkai. Number three, on the other hand, the other two were good ones. V'oid savcha hazara. Then the Azara cried out for good. Su'u sharim rashechem. Gates, lift up your heads. V'yikonis Yishmael ben Piachi, Talmid of Pinchas. Let Yishmael ben Piachi, the Talmud of Pinchas, come in. In other words, he's like the Talmud of Pinchas in that he's a good person. Now, we said before that his family were the ones Oilimei grew up on. We said, woe because of their fists. So Rashi explains, he himself was good, but the members of his family were not. So he himself was a tzaddik, and he deserved to be Kohen Gadol, and therefore the Azara is calling out and praising him, but the members of his family were no goodniks. There is, by the way, another possibility is actually based on some information that Josephus gives, it's possible that there were two Yishmael ben Piachis or Piavis who were Kohen Gadol. It seems that one was about 50 years before the Churban, and one about 20 years, so 10 years or so. So the first one might have been a good one. The first one was the good one, and the second one might be the one that the Gemara is saying over here, that his family was bad, and he himself may not have been so good either. Anyway, so let him come in, be Yishamish b'Kohen Gadol, and serve as Kohen Gadol. So like he deserved it so much, like the Azara itself cried out in his favor that he deserves to be there. Maybe this is why Rashi makes a point of saying that he was kosher and his family were no goodniks when he was appointed. Mestama, everybody would have thought, well, his family are no goodniks, he's probably no good either, and therefore the Azara would have had to cry out, Adarabi, he's good and he deserves to be Kohen Gadol. He's a Talmud of Pinchas. Yeah, I guess whoever was on the Darug to hear it, yeah. But oid savcha hazara, then the fourth time the Azara cried out was also for good. Su'u sharem rashechem, v'yikonis Yochanan ben Nauboi, Talmide shal Pinkai, let Yochanan ben Nauboi, the Talmud of Pinkai, come in, v'yimale kreisim mikod sheshamayim, and fill up his stomach with the kodshim of Hashem. Who is this Yochanan ben Nauboi? Omru all about Yochanan ben Nauboi, shoya oicho gimel meis agolim. He would eat 300 calves. Now, on the side of it, here it brings, doesn't mean just him by himself, that's a guzma. It means he had a very large household, so between all of them, they could eat a huge amount. Veshoise gimel meis gabe yayin. He would drink 300 barrels of wine. Veoichel aboim sa gozlos, and he would eat 40 sa of pigeons, bikinuach soda, just for dessert. So, Guzma, right, but again, it means, you know, it's between him and his family, yeah. Omru, so they said, Kol Yomov, Shol Yochanan ben Nauboi, Lo Nimtza Noisa B'Mikdash. Throughout Yochanan ben Nauboi's term as Kohen Gadol, there was never any Noisa in the Bais Mikdash, because between him and his family, they ate it. So in that sense, in other words, it's a covered for the Korbanos. Like this you have, when there's Noisa, it has to be burnt, and it's a bit less of a covered for the Korban. So like this, he accomplished that there's no Noisa. So even though he may be a glutton, and his family, you know, gluttons and whatever, but at least they're accomplishing something good, and therefore the Azara cried out that he deserves to be Kohen Gadol. Yeah, like a big open house, yeah. Now, who is this Yochanan ben Nauboi? So actually, so Josephus, when he talks about the Kohenim Gdolim during the decades before the Churban, he mentions one called Hananiah ben Nedebeus. Now, Nedabai is fairly similar to Narboi, so it could be that he's talking about the same person in the Gemara over here. Hananiah and Yochanan is practically the same name. So in that case, he was Kohen Gadol about 20 years. In that case, he was Kohen Gadol for a few years, about 20 years before the Churban. On the other hand, Marsha says that this actually refers to Yochanan Kohen Gadol, the famous one who was Kohen Gadol for 80 years and then became a Tzaduki. And he says like this, originally he was also a Talmud of Pinchas, just like we said, Yishmael ben Piachi. But then he went bad and he became a Tzaduki, so therefore it got changed. He's not Talmidish of Pinchas anymore, now he's just Talmidish of Pinkai. Like the name was changed, like he doesn't deserve to be called a Talmud of Pinchas anymore. Anyway, the point would be, again, since he was a king and he was powerful, so therefore, again, he had a huge entourage and a huge family and whatever, and therefore they were able to eat all the kudshim. According to, so he was a Kohen Gadol and, so he, and king, yeah. I mean, he was one of the Hashmonoim who made themselves kings, even though Al Pi Halacha they shouldn't have, yeah. This is in the middle of Second Beis Mikdash. So you have Makisiyahu and his sons defeated the Greeks and then got them out of Eretz Yisrael. Then you had several generations of Hashmonaim who ruled over Eretz Yisrael, one of them being Yochanan Kohen Gadol. And we're told that he was Kohen Gadol for 80 years and then became a Tzaduki. Actually, you have opinions that Yochanan Kohen Gadol is actually the father of Makisiyahu. There's a lot of discussion about it. So you have the Gemara in Kiddushin, actually, where it tells a story involving Yanai HaMelech, where the Chachamim said, where one of the Chachamim stood up and said, you shouldn't be Kohen Gadol because your mother was captured by the Greeks. And a Shavuya is puzzled to the corner. Now, there it says Yanai. He wasn't crying. Actually, what happened was he ended up fighting against the Chachamim and killing many of them. As a result of this, you have the whole story where a tzaduki named Eliezer ben Pu'ira convinced him we don't need the Chachamim anymore, they're just rebelling against you. It's a whole story over there in Kedushin, Daf Samachvav. Now there it says Yanai, so that's not necessarily the same as Yochanan Kohen Gadol, although you have in the Gemara in Brachas, where Abaya says, who Yanai, who Yochanan, that they're two names for the same person, so then maybe. Josephus actually tells a somewhat similar story about Yochanan Kohen Gadol, the grandson of Matisyahu, although with the names a little bit different, but he tells broadly the same story, so it might be that it actually was that it actually was the same Yochanan, and that's what triggered him to become a Tzaduki. Whatever, there's a good deal of discussion pro and con about this in many different history books. So the Gemara asks, "My Salka baby Yisachar Ish Krabarkai. What ended up happening to this Yisachar Ish Krabarkai? We said that he was mevaza the kodshim and passeling them by doing the avoda wearing gloves. So we have to assume something happened to him in Olam Hazeh. What was it? So the story was like this. Amri. They said the story was like this. Malka or Malkasa Habu Yasri. One time the king and queen, Rashi says, of Beis Hashmonoi were sitting together. And by the way, now again, the Hashmonoim themselves were officially Kohenim Gdolim. So what is they doing? Another Kohen Gadol in that time called Yisachar Ish Krabarkai. One possibility that some historians say is that during that period, there were actually two positions called Kohen Gadol. There was what you could call the political Kohen Gadol, who was officially the ruler of the Jewish people. And then you have the actual Kohen Gadol, the one who actually goes and serves in the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur and so forth. So you could not always were those the same person. Sometimes they were, for example, Shimon HaTzadik, but not always. So in this case, you had Yanai HaMelech, or whichever king it was at that time, is officially, he has the official title of Kohen Gadol, but he's not actually serving in the Beis Mikdash on Yom Kippur and at the other time. So instead, you had the actual Kohen Gadol, and in this case, it was this Yisachar Ish Krabarkai. Anyway, so the king and queen were sitting together. Malka Omer Gadya Yoy, or Malkasa Omer Imre Yoy. The king said, a goat is better to eat than a sheep, and the queen said, a sheep is better to eat than a goat. Omru, so they decided among themselves, man moichach, who is going to answer the question, which expert can we ask who's going to know? Kohen Gadol. Let's ask the Kohen Gadol. The Kamasa Korbanos Kol Yoma, because he brings Korbanos every day. There's both sheep and goats brought as Korbanos. The Kohen Gadol is entitled to a portion of every Korban, so he's going to know, he'll know which one is better. Asa Ihu, so Yisachar Ish Krabarkai came. And when they told him what the argument is, Achve biyode, he made a motion with his hand, like, what kind of question is that? E gad yoyoy, if a goat was better for was better to eat, yasek litmida, then a goat would be the one brought for the korban tamid. You have the korban tamid twice a day, and what is the korban tamid? Davka, a sheep. So you see from that, in other words, that a sheep is better than a goat. Amar Malka, but the king was very annoyed by that, very insulted by that. Hoyovalai Havalai Aimsa de Machosa. He didn't have respect for the king, that not only he disagreed with me, but he also said it like and made with his hand like that. Nifsikul the Yamine, his right hand should be chopped off. So now Yisachar didn't want to lose his right hand. Yohav Sheikhar Paskil Ismali. So he gave the executioner Sheikhar to cut off his left hand instead. Shama Malko Paskil Yamine. The king heard what happened and ordered that his right hand should be chopped off also. So he wound up losing both his hands. Amar Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says, as horrible as that was, Brich Rachmana de Ashkele li Yisachar Ishkvar Bakai Lemetayb Semine Bahai Amar. Blessed is Hashem who gave Yisachar Ishkvar Bakai his punishment, what was due to him in Olam Hazeh. So one thing is, first of all, this way it'll teach people in the future not to do such a thing. And second of all, it also means it was kapara for him in this world, so this way he didn't lose his place in Olam Haba. The reason why he ended up losing both hands is, in fact, because we're saying that he wore gloves on his hands. Now, actually, it's really only the right hand that's used for Avodah. You don't use the left hand. But you actually have, when you're putting on gloves, you have to put it on using the other hand. So that means he's taking his left hand and using it to put the glove on his right hand. So in that sense, like the left hand is the one, it was the one who made it all happen, so to speak. And therefore, Min HaShamayim, it was brought about that was the one that was chopped off first. Not only it was chopped off, but it was chopped off first before the right hand. There are a number of Maimori Chassidus, beginning from the Tzemach Tzedek, and for example, there's a couple of Sichas where it mentions that on Achron Shal Pesach, Tofresh Samach Vav, the famous Achron Shal Pesach, which was the first time when they had Mashiach Soda in Term Chetmimim, that the Rebbe Rashab said a Maimor on this Gemara, and there are various other Maimorim on it from the different Rebbeim, beginning with Tzemach Tzedek, talking about the deeper idea of what's going on over here with this argument between the king and the queen. In one of those Ma'amarim of the Tzemach Tzedek, it talks about that the goat and the sheep represent respectively the Balei Esek and the Balei Torah. The goat represents the Balei Esek, because they have to be tough and strong in order to work with the world, and the sheep, which is more docile, represents the Balei Torah. And therefore, the argument is, which one of them is greater? In most of the other Maimarim, it talks about somewhat differently that the goat represents the Balei Tshuva and the sheep represents the Tzaddikim. So the king and the queen represent Kudsha Brichu Shchinte. So from Kudsha Brichu's point of view, the goat is greater, the Baal Tshuva is greater. In a certain sense, they have like less to do with the world because they had to withdraw from parts of it, and therefore he considers that greater, whereas the queen says that no, the sheep, the one who's a tzaddik to begin with, who didn't do Averis, is the one who's greater from the Shchina's point of view. And therefore, they're saying, let's bring in the Kohen Gadol, because the Kohen Gadol is involved in the Avodah every day. He's the one who's connecting the Jewish people to the Eivishter through the Avodah. And therefore, we can ask him which one is the better one. Yeah. So the Gemara continues, Omer Abashi, Yisachar ish kfar barkai leitonim asnissim. This Yisachar ish kfar barkai had never learned Mishnah. If he had, he wouldn't have thought that just because the sheep is brought for the Korban Tamid, therefore it's actually objectively better than a goat. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah at the end of Christus. In fact, this Gemara is also brought at the end of Christus for this reason. The Gemara says over there, Reb Shimon Omer, Kvasim Kodmim Le'izim B'chomakim. Sheep always come ahead of goats. Meaning, in other words, whenever in the Torah, whenever it says that you have a korban, that you could bring a sheep or a goat, it always mentions the sheep first. Yochom Apneshim Uvchorim B'minam. You would think that's because sheep are actually objectively better. No, Talmud Lomer, Im Keves Yavi Korbanei. Therefore, no, when it comes to a chatas, when it comes to a private person's chatas, instead, it first mentions the case where the person brings a goat, a female goat, and only then does it say, and if he brings a female sheep. So, Malamet Shashneim, Shkulim Ka'achad, this comes to teach us because in one place you have it out of order, therefore that teaches us that they're both the same. Like we had in last week's parasha, we had when it says, who Aaron or Moshe, and Rashi explains that usually Moshe comes first, and here you have Aaron first to show us that Shneim Shkulim, they're both on an equal level. So, the same thing over here, in one place, it puts the Seira first in order to show that Keves and a Seira are on the same level. So therefore, so Yisachar, if he had known that Mishnah, then he wouldn't have been so quick to say that a sheep is definitely better. Lepoil, they brought the keves every day as a korban tamid. Fine, but he would have said, in other words, it's true that we bring the korban tamid from sheep, but on the other hand, we see from this that goats also have a maila over sheep, and therefore, like he might have said, for example, we can't really reconcile. We can't really say which one is better than the other. So why the Torah picks a keves for the korban tamid? There's a cost of it. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, one idea is that ultimately, if we're saying, for example, that the keves represents the Bale Torah and the A's represents the Bale Esek, or that the keves represents the Tzadikim and the A's represents the Bale Tshuva, on a day-to-day, the day-to-day avodah, the Korban Tamid should be the keves, should be the one who's always doing the right thing, that represents the one who's always doing the right thing. As an occasional thing, you have the A's, but it's not, after all, to be a Bale Tshuva is not standard operating procedure. It's the normal thing is that not that a person does an Aveda and then does Truva. I think it mentions in those Maimonim, it mentions the idea. We know the famous expression from the Zohar, Mashiach also la'asaba tzadikaya b'tiyuvda, that the Mashiach is going to cause even the tzadikim to do Truva. So even the tzadikim themselves need to be brought as a korban and be brought up to a higher level. So he didn't know that Mishnah. Ravina Amar Afilu Mikra Nami like Kara. Ravina says it's more than that. This Yisocha Kfar Bar Kai didn't even know Psukim. Dichtiv Im Keves Im Eiz, because when it comes to a Shlomim, the Torah tells us if a person brings a sheep or if a person brings a goat, and it doesn't show, the Torah doesn't give you any hint there which one is better than the other. Therefore, Yiboy Keves Lysi, Yiboy Eiz Lysi. So when it comes to a Shlomim, a sheep and a goat are on an equal level, and you can bring either one, and therefore if he had realized that, if he had known that possibly, then he would have again known, he would have known that the sheep and the goat are on an equal level, and he wouldn't have been so quick to dismiss the king's opinion. So he could be one of the Kohanim who bought his way in there, yeah. The Chacham Sofer actually has an interesting point about it. He says also, we know that a regular person does something that's chayiv chatos, they have to bring either a sheep or a goat, as we're saying, a female sheep or a female goat. The king, Davka, has to bring a male goat. So therefore, when he says that the if the goat was really that good, they would bring it for the Tamid, also he's hinting over there like the king is like not so great that he has to bring a goat instead for his korban, like as if the king is more susceptible to doing Averis than everybody else. And the king was offended by the implication of that, and that's also why not just that he said that, but also the implication behind it, that he's making fun of the king, and like kings are more susceptible to doing Averis than the average person, and therefore he ordered his hand chopped off. Yeah. Hadron alach makom shenagu is slick ala pesach rishon. When we started the Masechta, I mentioned in the times of the Rishonim, they used to divide Masechta Pesachim into two parts. They would learn the first four Prakim and the tenth Perak as one Masechta, because those all talk about the Dinim of Pesach, which are applicable nowadays also. And then the Prakim, the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, which all talk about the Korban Pesach, those they would learn separately, and they called that Masechta Pesach Sheni. Because the topics in those prakim mostly are really more things that belong in Seder Kodshim. They're more things that talk about Korbanos. So therefore they would learn them as a separate Masechta. So they call them Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni. The Rif, for example, only writes on the first four prakim and the tenth perek. He doesn't write on any of the middle prakim, even though you have sugyas in them that are negei lahalacha nowadays. For example, we're going to have at the beginning of the seventh perek a sugya about the halachas of kashrus. He doesn't discuss it over there. Instead, he discusses it in Masechta Chulin. So when they first printed the Gemara, what they did is in the same way, they still had people who still followed that way. Therefore, they left the rest of the page blank, like you do at the end of a Masechta. They didn't want to start the next Perek on the same page. So they separated it. Later on, in one of the printings in the 1700s, somebody wrote over here what we have over here, Seder v'Hilchos Korban Pesach Rishon B'Ktzara. Somebody wrote a summary of the halachas of Pesach as they emerge from the next four Perekim. So that's why now we're finished with Pesach Rishon, and tomorrow we begin what the Rishonim used to call Masechta Pesach Sheni, which is the part of Psachim that talks about the Korban Pesach. So, Yishkoyach, everyone.